obtain feedback, to exchange ideas, so that by the time the final legislation is prepared, we have all the bases covered. The fiscal system of Alaska, many of you will be very familiar with it for oil and gas. It consists really of four main types of payments. We have the royalties. We have what is called the production tax. It is also sometimes called the severance tax. And many people even call it ELF because it is really using the ELF formula as a main feature. Then, of course, there is property tax and state corporate income tax. It is important to note that in addition, of course, the federal government also has a corporate income tax. So that is the total fiscal package that oil and gas companies are subject to. This presentation will deal with proposed changes to the production tax. The current production tax on oil, and I like to concentrate it on oil because that's the main revenue source at this point in time. The current production tax for oil is 12.25% net of the royalties for the first 5 years, and then it bumps up to 15%. However, these percentages are multiplied by the so-called economic limit factor, the L factor, and that is a factor between 0 and 1. That means if you multiply by 0, then there is no tax. If you multiply by 1, then you get the full 15% tax. The purpose of the ELF was to lower the production tax for the smaller fields and the fields with low productivity wells. What I like to do is just show you the formula. This is actually the ELF formula. This is an immensely complex formula. Actually, even for people with an A in math, this is not so easy to understand. A double exponent here. And the formula is somewhat complex, and it was developed in 1989, and has served the state well for a number of years. But right now, this formula does give results that are no longer in keeping, really, with the economics of the, say, oil and gas industry. Just to explain the formula rather than doing some calculations, I've given some examples. Say, suppose a new field was discovered that produced as much as 600,000 barrels a day, with 2,000 wells in it that each produced 300 barrels a day. That is at $50 oil, a very, very healthy oil field. This formula would result in zero. So the formula would result in zero if that kind of an oil field would be found. If you have a lower, smaller field, the 150,000 field, also with 500, it would still result in zero. So here you see that actually very large fields with very significant production have no tax. The reason that there is no tax is because of the fact that the well productivity of 300 barrels a day was the benchmark in 1989 for marginal fields. If you, however, drop the number of wells, so if you have a higher well productivity, if you drop the number of wells to 100, then suddenly the ELF becomes 0.8. So that means that if you are at the 15%, you would receive a 12% ELF, a very healthy tax. What you see from that right away is that really this tax is extremely sensitive to the number of wells in the field, very sensitive. If you have a large number of wells, it is zero. If you have lower number of wells, the tax suddenly is very high. You see another example there, that if you have a 30,000 barrel a day field with 20 wells in it, the tax is almost zero, 0.07. If you have only 5 wells in it, the tax suddenly, or the ELF factor suddenly becomes 55, so you would multiply the 55% times the 15. this formula really from a petroleum economist point today is just too sensitive for the number of wells. Because what you see here is, if you have an oil field with 30,000 barrel a day in it, all you need is a few extra wells and no more tax. So what you see here is that the formula is really too sensitive with respect to well performance and with respect to the number of wells in the field. And consequently, that leads to an incentive for oil companies. I'm not necessarily saying that's happening, but it would lead to an incentive under very high oil prices to keep every well producing that is even producing a little amount of oil. And it would also be an incentive to drill additional wells just to bring the tax down. So consequently, those incentives, to give those kind of incentives, is not a wise tax policy today when oil prices today is $66 a barrel. So the formula that was worked well in 1989 really now has very serious implications. Of course, if the ELF is zero, that means that the production tax will be zero. You would still get the royalties, the property tax, and the corporate income tax. As I mentioned, this tax was designed in 1989 when oil prices were relatively low. In 1988, the average price was 14. In 1989, it was 17. And in those days, it looked as if oil prices were going to stay low for a while. And 300 barrels a day was indeed a good indication of a marginal field at those price levels. So consequently, when the formula was designed, it was actually a reasonable reflection of the economic circumstances of the day. Actually, when this formula was designed, there were only six oil fields actually producing. A somewhat unexpected development took place, that right now there are many, many satellite fields to the original oil fields that are much smaller, and that was really not contemplated in the formula. The formula had some good results initially. It definitely promoted the development of smaller fields, and that happened in the North Slope. But now the benchmarks are outdated. In the current environment that we are, these benchmarks are outdated. So it is now time for an overhaul. What are the deficiencies from an economic point of view of this so-called ELF? Firstly, as I already demonstrated by illustrating the formula, there is really not any longer a rational relationship with well productivity and field production. Secondly, the ELF is not responding reasonably to oil field decline. Many of the oil fields in the North Slope, as you well know, are now in a decline phase. And what we are discovering is that this formula really doesn't work in the interest of the state in a declining oil field. What we experience with all force today is that if prices are very high, the share that the state receives of its resources is not reasonable. There is no reasonable balance between revenues of the state and revenues of the companies under a range of oil prices. And above all, the ELF does not provide sufficient incentive for reinvestment. And I will explain that in somewhat more detail later. So the tax has serious deficiencies at this point in time. I'd just like to show you some graphs here. This is actually the graph of the Kuparuk oil field. What you see in the bars is the production level, which went up in the early 90s to almost 300,000 barrels a day, and is now gradually declining to about 100,000 barrels a day. Kuparuk is the second largest oil field in North America. This is a world-class oil field with world-class economics. But if you analyze the ELF has already declined to almost zero and will face to zero in the next 2 years. It is ridiculous to have a world-class oil field that no longer pays production tax. So, as you can see from this graph, it is now the time to start changing these matters. It is not just the Kuparuk field. The following graph is a forecast of the Department of Revenue, which shows the forecasts of the ELF factor. Firstly, for Pruru Bay, as you can see, the ELF factor gradually declines. For all the other fields combined, what you see there is that the ELF factor drastically declines over the next 10 years. Essentially, it seems that within about 10 years, the only field that will really be paying any tax would be the Pruru Bay field. Again, that is not a logical relationship, certainly not in an environment of oil prices as we have today.
Excuse me, Mr. Pedro. I'd like to recognize Representative Gruenberg, Representative Guerra, who joined us now. And Senator Dyson just walked in.
As a consequence, I think it is the appropriate time for a drastic change in the production tax. And it is therefore that the governor has proposed a profit-sharing production tax, which will be a complete replacement of the current ELF-based version of the production tax on oil and gas. This will be a law of general application. So that is an important point to mention. Why this profit-sharing system? Somewhat later, I will explain the international context of this. But the reason that we opted for this profit-sharing system is because already so many other nations in the world have been successful with this. An important other nation, just to give as an example, is Norway, which also has a profit-based style PT. Now, I just like to give to your consideration. Norway is a country on the Arctic Circle, like Alaska. They produce oil, forestry products, and have a fisheries industry. And they have started their oil industry in the 70s. So here you have a complete, perfect comparison with Alaska. Norway, on a per capita basis, produces about half the amount of oil and gas as Alaska. But Norwegians are 50% richer. Now, could you please explain how that worked? What is Norway doing right, and what is Alaska doing wrong? The big difference is that with the existing system, wealth is slipping through the fingers of Alaskans, and Norwegians hold on to it. So Norwegians are doing something right, and Alaskans are doing something wrong. And what we are trying to propose with this formula is to start doing things right. And that is the basic concept. We like to use the experience of so many other nations that have faced the same resource optimization issues as Alaska has faced and learn from it and see how this system can be improved and can be done better. That is why we selected this profit-sharing production tax. I'd like now to explain a little bit more how this tax is supposed to work. How is this tax calculated? The production tax is a field-by-field tax. What is proposed is that, just as in Norway and other countries, the PPT will be based on the total cash flow from the company. And the tax rate will apply to the total cash flow of the company from oil and gas production. And then there will be tax credits to encourage investment. Or in other words, very different from the current production tax, it is proposed that this tax will be a consolidated tax at the corporate level. How is the PPT calculated? You take the gross production revenues, net of the royalties, based on wellhead prices, the same basis as we use for the current production tax, the valuation of the current production tax, less the producer's lease expenditures, which consist of the oil and gas capital expenditures, but only, of course, related to the production. This excludes the main pipeline, for instance, for gas or for oil. Oil and gas operating expenses, and less the production tax. A very simple concept. You take the gross revenues and you deduct all the cost. If there is a large amount of cash, like today, with high oil prices, then the share for Alaska is large. If there is a low amount of cash, then the share is low. That is a fair system for both parties. And because it is a fair system, that is why this tax has been implemented in so many other countries. And because it is a successful system, it has been implemented in so many countries. Now think a little bit more through this concept of a profit-based tax. Some people say there is not enough investment in the oil industry in Alaska. Now, why is that? Maybe that is true. Maybe there could be more investment. How do other nations, like Norway or Denmark or Holland or others, ensure that there is enough investment? With a profit-based system, if you see that you're going to make a large amount of profit in a year, like this year, what is the only way to reduce your tax? To reinvest. To reinvest. If you reinvest, that lowers your tax base. So a profit-sharing system has as a bonus that it is an automatic system to encourage reinvestment. If you take your dollar out, you pay the tax. If you reinvest, you don't pay. That is what builds oil production. That is what builds gas production. That's what builds an oil industry. Other nations have figured that out. Alaska doesn't have that. If you take a dollar out of Norway, what happens? 78 cents tax on that dollar. If you take a dollar out of Alaska, what happens? Nothing. So consequently, you can see that there is a strong incentive in Norway to reinvest. And consequently, Alaskans are not given incentive to reinvest in Alaska. The PPT will do that. The PPT will change that equation. That equation, just like other nations, will be further enhanced by providing investment tax credits when companies reinvest. A very interesting feature of this PPT is that if you make a loss in a year, if you're coming in as a new oil company, typically if you're coming in as a new entrant, you don't make profits day one. It typically takes 3, 4, 5, 6 years before you start seeing your first profits. In the meantime, you have to wait. What the PPT is proposed to do is that if you have losses, you can actually convert your losses to also a tax credit that is tradable, so that you can offset it in future years. But more important, you can trade it and transfer it. So that means somebody that comes in and invests a dollar receives right away tax credits back, because they can be sold to others. That immensely increases the attractiveness of new entrants investing in Alaska. Another important design feature of the proposed PPT is that with this tax credit, we are creating a progressive tax. There have been several voices around Alaska saying, really, we should have a progressive tax. And particularly if you look at the oil prices today, that's a good idea. We should have a progressive tax. This is what this is. This is a progressive tax. Why? Because this tax credit structure, together with the profit-based structure, ensures that the share of the revenues that the government receives will automatically go up together with increasing oil prices. You can create progressive systems in many different ways, with tax credits, with uplifts, with rate of return payout systems, with sliding scales. Why did we opt for the tax credits as a methodology of creating a progressive system? The reason is precisely because we like to attract new entrants to Alaska, and we like to encourage the smaller oil companies, the independents, the explorers, to get on with the job of increasing their presence in Alaska. The easiest way to do that is through tax credits. So that is a convenient way of at the same time stimulating investment and have a progressive system at the same time. Of course, there will be other features that we are still considering in some detail that make the tax favorable for small independents, explorers, to encourage that exploration and new entrants. So we will find in the legislation special additional features that will deal with that. So the proposed PPT is based on actual economics and generates a tax when there is a reasonable profit, provides a reasonable balance between the state and the producers over a wide range of oil prices. It strongly encourages investment and reinvestment in the state, and it protects and encourages explorers and independents. That is the philosophy of this PPT. The PPT rate, how, and the tax rate will be, of course, in the legislation and will be proposed in the near future. We are still considering the final touches on this internally, but as I mentioned, we consider it very important to sketch out already the concepts for you so that we can engage and have a meaningful and interesting interchange of ideas to improve our work as we go along. The general principle of the rate is that, of course, the overall revenues to the state must be significantly higher at today's prices. And if I say significant, I mean significant. I don't mean another 10%. So consequently, it must be significantly higher. However, of course, the essence of a profits-based tax is that if the prices is low, and then there is losses, and there's no tax. If the profits are so low that they become negative or zero, then, of course, there will be no tax. So that is the fair balance. That reduces the risk to investors. If the price is low, we share with them the burden. If the prices are high, we share with them the benefits. Of course, what is very important is, what is the crossover relative to the current system? What is the equivalency price? Of course, once we have the final figures, we are going to give you very detailed information about that. Because you like to judge, on average, are we going to be better off? That depends on where that crossover price will be. What is also important, as I mentioned, at average prices, companies that make low investments will pay significantly more, but strong investors may pay less than today. That depends on how much they invest. I mentioned the international experience, and let me mention somewhat more how many nations actually in the world are today working on this profit-based system. There are really two ways how this profit-based system is being implemented around the world. One is through taxation systems, similar to what we are proposing. You pay tax in cash. And there are about 25 jurisdictions in the world that use that system today. There is also another system that's called production sharing, where you divide all the oil in three pots, an amount of oil sufficient to recover the cost, a share of the oil for the government, and a share of the oil for the investor. And that is called production sharing agreement. That's also profit-based. There are about 50 countries in that group. A very large number of important oil producers are using this profit-based system today. All the large oil companies, including all of the companies, large companies that work in Alaska, work in countries that have these profit-based systems. So they are familiar with it. This is not something new to them. They know it from other countries. Examples of taxation-based systems similar to the PPT proposal that we have is actually Algeria, one of my other clients, which I'm helping to implement actually as we speak today, a similar profit-sharing system in Algeria, Australia, Bolivia, Brazil, Canada. Many of the provinces and territories in Canada are using it. Alberta, you probably all know the explosive development of the oil sand industry in Alberta. They are heading for 2 million barrels a day in the year 2010. And how are they doing it? With a 25% profits tax. That's how they are doing it. So consequently, here you see major developments in North America, also offshore Newfoundland, Mackenzie Delta, major developments in Canada, other, furthermore, Denmark, Namibia, Norway, that I already mentioned, Papua New Guinea, Saudi Arabia in their gas initiative, Senegal, Thailand, Trinidad and Tobago, Tunisia, United Kingdom, Venezuela. Here you see a long list of nations that are using that. And not only are they using it, some nations are in the process of revising it. A very interesting event happened in December when the United Kingdom actually upped their profit-based system from 40% to 50%. So what is happening in the world is not only that countries move to the profit-based system, but with the higher oil prices, countries are reviewing whether what they're getting from the oil is enough or not. And Britain just adjusted their system. There is another group of production sharing countries, as you can see. The production sharing countries, there is 50 of them. I don't want to give you the complete list, but here you see important countries that, say, some of the oil companies that are working in Alaska are also working in, like Angola, Azerbaijan, China, Egypt, India, Indonesia, Kazakhstan, Libya, Malaysia, Nigeria, Qatar, a very important competitor for the gas project, Russia, Vietnam, and Yemen, all important countries that use this profit-based system through production sharing. What we should not forget is that with the enhanced incentives, the profit-based system that has an automatic reward for investors, as well as the gas line that hopefully will come about quickly, we will create a whole new environment, really, in Alaska, whereby I believe many of the oil companies will consider Alaska a new core area for petroleum investment and increased oil and gas production. And why am I saying that? Because the reality is that international competition around the world has become significantly stronger. Around 200 oil companies, international oil companies, are now all over the world. Bidding rounds are extremely competitive, and consequently, the Alaska framework that is being offered here will be a very positive framework to consider new investment. In conclusion, the current ELF-based production tax is completely outdated. It is a regressive tax that is no longer in the interest of Alaska. And it is therefore that the governor proposes that Alaska adopts this profit-based system that will provide, on average, a higher government take for Alaska. It is a progressive tax with strong incentives for investment and exploration, and it will attract new entrants to Alaska. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to give this presentation. I would welcome any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Van Meer.
He has.
Any questions?
Excuse me. I'll start off with one. As you know, and I've been asked by a representative, and it's a very good question, a person who represents the interest of the Cook Inlet. We have a declining oil field in Cook Inlet. I think there's 16 platforms there now, of which two or three are still producing fairly good quantities of oil, but the total production in Cook Inlet's probably between 24 and 26 thousand barrels a day.
Yes.
What is this system? How are we going to model this system, or can we model this system to encourage additional work in some of these aging fields?
No, I think you have a very important question here. To begin with, as you probably know, in Cook Inlet, only a few the fields, actually gas fields, pay actually production tax today. So the production tax burden is relatively modest in the Cook Inlet in total. We do not believe we will. We are meticulously taking care that the PPT that is designed in the end will not put a stronger burden, of course, on the operators in the Cook Inlet. Now, what is very important, though, as I mentioned, this PPT will enable the producers in Cook Inlet to take a new look at their oil fields and a new look at their gas fields and say, look, with these tax credits, with these tax credits that we can trade to other oil companies, we can actually look at new opportunities for investment in the Cook Inlet to increase the gas production, to maintain the oil production. That now becomes a whole new equation. And that is why we believe that this tax will be good for Cook Inlet. It will be good for maintaining oil production, stopping the decline if possible for a while, and of course enhancing gas production if we can.
Thank you. Additional questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I don't have any
Well, come up here by Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Van Mieris, in your words, you say the ELF is completely outdated, and your charts show that the decline is an effective tax rate as much as zero on some really significant fields. In hindsight, if you were able to go back in time and kind of pick the moment at which it would have been prudent for us to change our tax structure, can you suggest when that might have been?
No, to begin with, as you correctly stated, I would say when the ELF was designed, at the time it was designed, it was actually quite an innovative tax by international standards. In fact, when I came in 1996 to Alaska and when I was asked about the ELF, I mentioned, yes, this seems to me, you know, compared to other areas in the world, a rather innovative tax. What really, I think, was an important moment for this administration is the fact that the oil prices are now so high, and that consequently it is now becoming such an enormous loss for Alaska compared to what other nations will collect that are in a similar position, that there is absolutely no justification anymore to maintain this system. So I think it is really since the recent strong oil price increases that the economic equation has changed so dramatically that you absolutely have to do this. And of course, over the last few years, we have worked on a variety of alternatives of this production tax. In fact, the first thing the governor asked me was, what about the production tax? And so consequently, it has been on the radar screen already for a while by both sides of the House, I think, as a tax that needs revision. But I think it was precisely the enormous increases in oil prices even of the last year that made it abundantly apparent that this needs to be changed.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Well, this is just kind of a follow-up question to the previous question, rather than, you know, getting too caught up in the in histories of a particular turning point that may or may not have come. But isn't currently this process of splits between the governments and oil companies extremely dynamic, and a lot of the major oil producing countries across the world reviewing their particular structure and modifying these the last couple of years?
There is right now around the world, there are two things going on around the world. Firstly, a large number of countries have relatively strong progressive systems. And consequently, examples of that are Russia, Angola, Azerbaijan, areas where the major oil companies have major investments. And so what is happening today as a result of the higher oil prices, what you are seeing is these progressive systems are now clicking in. And consequently, in many of these nations, the government take is going up very significantly. So even without any government action, just because that is how the system was designed in the first place. So what we are seeing is not just higher oil prices. What we are also seeing is that many other nations with strongly progressive systems are actually automatically increasing their government take and consequently getting a significantly higher benefit out of the resources. As I mentioned, there are also countries today that adjust their system in view of the high oil prices and in view of the fact that they can become more competitive with other nations if they adjust their fiscal system. So from that perspective, I have no problem at all with the competitive position of Alaska, that if at, say, today's prices, there would be a significantly higher government take. Would that erode the competitiveness of Alaska? No, it wouldn't, because everybody else is doing it, and because that is the international norm. So consequently, I think that gives me confidence that if Alaska would put a system in place that would have significantly higher government take, say, under current prices, that system would remain competitive from an international perspective.
Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here.
Great pleasure.
I really have two questions. I understand kind of the historical pattern of mature oil fields like crude oil.
Yes.
But do you think you and the governor are proposing here will encourage our major oil companies like crude oil to invest more here? That's my first question. The second one is, what will happen to the state's take if oil prices decrease dramatically back closer to historic levels?
Now, to begin with, yes. Now, the major oil companies are, of course, significantly investing in Alaska. I don't want to make the impression that there is no investment taking place in Alaska. Significant investment is taking place. But do I believe that oil companies will increase their investment, their reinvestment, the major oil companies? I do believe so. In fact, some oil companies have even said that publicly. Some companies have already said publicly, look, when this whole new package is all together, we are looking at significant new initiatives in Alaska. Obviously, with a PPT system, you are entirely correct. If oil prices would decline to, say, $15 a barrel, just to give a dramatic figure, then this PPT would be down to zero. And you would have, now, under the normal production tax, you would not collect very much either at $15 a barrel. But yes, you will probably be $100 million behind where you otherwise would have been, because now you have zero. So implicit in an PPT is that since it is profits-based, if there are no profits, there are no tax. And so it is clearly true that if the price is very low, you are worse off than you were before. If the price are the way they are today, you were significantly better off. And then, of course, the detailed design of the tax depends on, you know, the probability. Are we, on average, better off? We are designing the tax in such a way that, yes, on average, we will be better off based on how we see oil price developments reasonably today. That's the concept. But yes, your comment is very true and correct.
Is it fair to imply you believe our major oil companies here will support what you're doing?
We are currently, of course, in discussion with the major oil companies also on the whole matter of the PPT. There is no agreement at this point in time between the industry and the state, but we are continuing the discussions and see what will come out of that.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Dr. Van Meers and Mr. Corbis, for the presentation. I was as a pre-remark, I guess, I was surprised by some of the strong language that you used in favor of a profit-based tax system. And given that, given your obvious passion for the need for change, I guess I'm curious, and this is kind of a process question I might want to respond to also. I'm curious as to whether or not this package that you're, I think your word was, that you're tweaking, is going to be presented to the legislature inside or outside the context of the gas pipeline contract.
No, as I mentioned, the concept is that this law will be presented as a law of general application. So consequently, it is not something that can be inside the contract from the beginning. The idea is step one, we come to the legislature with this PPT legislation as a standalone law because it applies to all kinds of oil companies that are not the sponsors. So consequently, step one will be there will be a law of proposed and considered of that is of general application on its own merits. So that is step one. If the legislature approves that law, then there will be a possibility of tying that in the total negotiated framework. But first, we need a law that on its own merits stands up as a good law for Alaska. That's the first step.
I want to just repeat the answer. Make sure.
Okay, go ahead, Senator Elton.
So step one can occur whether or not you have reached any kind of an agreement on gas pipeline contract, and should occur prior, potentially prior to a gas pipeline contract.
No, the whole process of when agreement can be reached and I think that is a matter for discussion, say, with higher levels. But the principle absolutely is that this PPT law will be presented as a standalone law of general application. And this PPT law has to be presented first before a stranded gas contract can be considered.
Thanks,
Mr. Chair. I'd like to also note for the record, Senator French joined us some time ago, present now. Senator, Representative Rammers.
Yeah,
go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, thanks. Doctor, I understand the carrot and stick nature of this tax scheme, and I get that, and we've discussed it. But I'll follow on to what Senator Dyson said, which is getting the producers to go along with this. We saw a year ago, after we did the aggregation of some of the fields with ELF, we saw punitive measures taken by our friends, I believe at BP, who declined to go forward with some wells. How... I'm one of those people that believes that we shouldn't have an adversarial or litigious, unnecessarily litigious relationship with the producers, but that we should also get our fair share. How do we strike that balance in light of what we saw last year after the governor announced aggregation in some of the fields?
No, I absolutely agree. That it is important for Alaska not to have an adversarial relationship with the industry. It is never a good idea to have adversarial relationships with investors. That is not the way to have an active economic growth. For that reason, this matter is an intensive discussion with the oil industry, and for that reason, it is a very important matter to discuss with them. Obviously, as I said, at this point in time, there is no conclusion of these discussions, and consequently, that is a matter that needs to be worked through further. But I absolutely agree with you that it is important for Alaska to seek an streamlined relationship, to seek a new focus, say, in the state that gives the industry the encouragement to indeed invest on a large scale in Alaska. Alaska is competing with many nations around the world, and the competition for investment dollars is very strong around the world, and consequently it is always good to avoid, say, conflicting relationships. That doesn't mean that every nation in the world is entitled to their fair competitive share of the value of the resources. That is a principle that all the nations adhere to, and that also Alaska has enshrined in its constitution, and that the people of Alaska are always fighting for justly.
Further questions, Senator? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, I'm very encouraged that this focuses so much on encouraging investment, but the question of, it's represented here on slide 10, is it's a consolidated tax at the corporate level, and I'm wondering, with these being tradable credits, does that mean that they can be applied against royalty payments, the corporate tax, the production tax, of course, if there is any, and also property tax?
The at this point in time, it is considered that it could be applied to the production tax that others may pay. It definitely will not be creditable against royalties or property tax. But we are still looking at the possibility of making it also creditable to state corporate income tax, but that because we like to keep it in the tax environment. But definitely, no, it will not be creditable against royalties and property taxes.
Follow-up? And within that context, you had said that this is a field-by-field tax, and I don't understand the field-by-field application if it's a corporate tax.
No, it is actually, I may have misspoken or I may have not explained this right. The current tax is of course a field-by-field tax, the current production tax with the ELF formula. What we are proposing is scrapping all of that and making it a corporate-based tax so that precisely if people from the North Slope like to invest in Cook Inlet, then they can just as much get the deduction and the tax credits as people that invest in the North Slope. Or in other words, the purpose is to reinvest in all of Alaska. It doesn't have to be the North Slope. It doesn't have to be Cook Inlet. It could be anywhere. That is the concept. And in order to achieve that concept, to spread more wealth and also maybe raise interest in other petroleum basins in Alaska, it has to be corporate. It has to be at the corporate level. And that is an important principle of this tax.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification.
Further questions? Representative Seaton?
Well, since we've got time, I guess I'll ask.
Absolutely, we got plenty of time.
You'd said Norway basically had a 78% tax rate.
Yes.
And now, did that correspond with the 50% that the UK just went to, or are those different portions of different taxes?
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. Each nation, of course, has so its own overall government take, as it is called, its overall percentage that it takes from the value of the resources. Norway has had traditionally a relatively high percentage, and the reason is that the Norwegians have what you could call a go-slow policy with their development of the offshore. They look for modest development. Britain has had tradition, at least since the early 90s, Britain has had a relatively low government take, because their goal was to boost North Sea production as quickly as possible and encourage small fields as quickly as possible. each region in the world has a government take that is kind of competitive for that environment, and therefore that's precisely one of the things we are going to present to you once this tax is completely ready for presentation. We will precisely illustrate for you how those competitive relationships take place, so that the percentage that we propose is indeed competitive. It is the fair share that Alaskans should get given the economic situation. But that is not necessarily identical to another nation, where you have to look at the specific of each area around the world and then decide how each area around the world competes. One thing is for certain, as I mentioned, it is clearly my view that under very high oil prices, there is significant space for an increase in government take as far as the production tax is concerned.
And just a clarification, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 40% to 50% increase that the UK just instituted, is that a PPT or is that a total government take?
That is a total government take, because, as I said, Britain has a somewhat low government take by international standards. What Britain has is a corporate income tax of 30% and then a special surtax that used to be 10% and is now 20%. And that is the total system. They don't have royalties, for instance, like Alaska would have, nor do they have property taxes. So the whole system is different. But as I said, Britain has always had, at least over the last decade, a somewhat lower government take because the North Sea, the British North Sea, is in its kind of in a mature phase, and they really felt that they wanted to stimulate the development of the remaining marginal fields. Nevertheless, with the current high oil prices, they felt that an increase to 50% was obviously justified.
I'd like to recognize Representative Berkowitz, who joined us. Representative Olson.
Dr. Brad Mears, can you tell us what percentage Alberta is using?
Alberta is using an to begin with, within the province of Alberta, there are many different petroleum systems. There is a fiscal system for conventional oil, for conventional gas. In fact, there are several stages of that. But the most important system right now in Alberta is for, oil sand plants, because that is the very strong development. The combined federal provincial tax rate, if I recall exactly, is about 36% right now. And then on top of that, there is a profit sharing of 25% for oil sand plants of very much the same nature as the PPT that we are proposing. Instead of a tax credit, they have kind of a rate of return-based payout concept to provide also some incentive for reinvestment. So the same overall philosophy applies. They engineered it a little bit different, but that is the Alberta system for oil sands.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Van Meer, with the PPT rate at low prices, the state revenue will be less than the current system.
Correct.
I'm trying to figure out in my mind where low prices is. Is that at a $30 barrel or a $40 barrel? At what point will the state break even, or will we be getting less than what we are now? At what price of oil do you think that could be?
We would definitely not consider $40 a barrel a low price. So I can assure you that would not be considered a low price. We are still working on the detailed figures, because we know that the question you ask is very important. We need to be comfortable with this break-even price, and consequently, as soon as the final figures will be released, we will be able to demonstrate for you where those break-even points are. actually, there is not one single break-even point. It really depends on, say, reinvestment levels. It depends on a number of other assumptions, whether you include new developments, whether it is just the existing fields. So there are several break-even points that we will present to you. For each particular type of investment will have its own break-even point. So it is actually a collection of break-even points depending on the assumptions that you make and depending on what you're actually considering. But I can assure you that we are not considering $40 a barrel a low price. We know how important your question is, and consequently, once the PPT law is being presented, there will be extensive studies showing precisely where these break-even points are.
Thank you.
Is that it, Representative Newman?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any other questions?
Chair?
Senator French.
Are you accepting questions from visiting senators?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Please come up and join us at the table.
Just ask one question. Hi.
Yes.
On your slide number 11, your handout indicates that capital expenditures made on the main pipeline would not be deductible.
Yes.
Do you mean the oil pipeline or the to-be-constructed gas line?
Both.
Or both?
Both.
So neither expenditure would be allowable as a deduction?
No, that's right. Of course, what I like to clarify is, and the reason is, that it is already deducted in order to determine the value at the wellhead. So the deduction, and that is why we clarify, of course, in order to obtain the wellhead price, you deduct transportation costs. And since the transportation cost is already deducted, any investments that are made in the midstream or downstream will not qualify for capital deduction.
Go ahead, Senator French.
And just so I understand, the administration is going to file a bill to capture this idea in the near future.
Yes, that's the concept.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Representative Seaton.
Yeah, kind of following up on the last question. A gas conditioning plant built in conjunction with the pipeline, would that be capital expenditures in here, or would that be capital expenditures in the pipeline, and where would Alaska be better off?
We are still doing studies on that, actually, what the best formula is. At this point in time, that is still open for discussion. But, of course, that all... is, and it is open, we are still evaluating that precise point that you made. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to, but there is a difference whether we use those capital expenditures to reduce wellhead price or use the capital expenditures on the credits against the production. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yes. So that's what we're doing economic studies on at the moment, and consequently in the final bill, there will be some proposals on it. As I said, that decision hasn't been made yet, but obviously the transportation systems by itself are out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. for coming. That was very informative. I appreciate it. Just to follow up on Representative Newman's question on where we're going to start reducing taxes and where we're going to start increasing taxes. And I know you're still working on the proposal, but
yes.
Let me just, I've got two questions with two different price scenarios from information I have from the Department of Revenue. At let's say $22 a barrel, for example, according to the Department of Revenue's projections, that produces gross revenue to the oil companies about $5 billion. Their profits at that level are about $1.2 billion. About a 25% profit margin at $22 a barrel, a price at which BP says is high enough that they can distribute excess cash flow to their shareholders. And so the first question is, would you envision that at a price of $22 a barrel where the profit margins are still around 25%, would you envision that you would be lowering taxes at that level? And the second question would be, at $60 a barrel, The projection from the Department of Revenue is that corporate profits, the profit margin is somewhere around 45%, about $7.2 billion in profits on $16 billion in revenue. Mm-hmm. And some quick math shows that we could take about $1.5 billion back at that price, leave a 35% profit margin, and level the shares between the states. So are you considering numbers like that at $60 a barrel to, and at $23 a barrel? Would What is your opinion about whether or not we should lower taxes?
No, as I mentioned, by the time all the final figures are developed, we will also present to you detailed studies. Many of them will be done by the Department of Revenue. Others I am preparing as we speak. So consequently, elaborate studies will be presented precisely on the issues that you just raised. Obviously, as I said, the precise break-even point will be discussed and will be illustrated the moment we have all the final figures together. As you will realize, those break-even points depend also very much on the assumptions that you make. There is no such thing as saying the break-even point is X, you know, dollars and X cents. An area, there's a gray area of several break-even points, yes, depending on the assumptions that you make, how much reinvestment you assume, how much, say, operating costs for future fields you assume. There's all kinds of unknowns that you would have to make assumptions on, say, production levels even. So we will present that information comprehensively when the bill is introduced. So consequently, unfortunately, I cannot give you a clearer answer at this point in time.
Any further questions? Seeing no further questions at this time, I'm going to adjourn this meeting as of 4:25 on January 18th. Meeting's adjourned. Thanks for coming. Thank you, Doc.